Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of it is brought to you by the Dollar Shave Club. Right now, for only $5, you can get the Dollar Shave Club Daily Essentials Starter Set, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. We'll be talking much more about their great products a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with our good martini. And this is one that just came down a little over an hour ago as we record this late Monday morning. The U.S. Supreme Court in a 7-2 decision, siding with Jack Phillips and the Masterpiece Cake Shop in the big fight over whether Colorado law requires him to bake a cake and decorate it for a same-sex ceremony. A couple different statements here from the majority opinion authored by Anthony Kennedy and joined by everyone except for Ginsburg and Sotomayor. He says, whatever the confluence of speech and free exercise principles might be in some cases, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission's consideration of this case was inconsistent with the state's obligation of religious neutrality. The reason and motive for the baker's refusal were based on his sincere religious beliefs and convictions. Quote, the delicate question of when the free exercise of the baker's religion must yield to an otherwise valid exercise of state power needed to be determined in an adjudication in which a religious hostility on the part of the state itself would not be a factor in the balance the state sought to reach. And then in reading this decision and the analysis of it on SCOTUS blog, Jim, it looks like most folks are concluding that the scope of this decision is fairly narrow, essentially ruling in Phillips' favor because they don't think he got a fair hearing before this Civil Rights Commission. And therefore, the larger issue about free religious expression and whether that's protected in this case under the First Amendment may have to wait to another case. So the good news is here is that the First Amendment at the moment is still alive and well, because a decision in the opposite direction would have been pretty chilling. What's your take here?
This is a good decision for those who find religious liberty to be paramount. It's not as ideal as it could be. There was a fascinating debate for the past hour or so on Twitter, people arguing about whether or not you could accurately describe this decision as narrowly decided. That was the official, I guess, in the first, you know, headline from AP or somebody else about this. And people were like, it's a 7-2 decision. Not that narrow. And what they're emphasizing, no, the scope of the decision is narrow. The best, I think you summarized it fairly well there, Greg. Basically, as one, I think it was Robert Verbruggen who put it as simply, don't be a jerk, is really the core component of this legal ruling. It doesn't broadly say that in every single circumstance you have a religious you can object to a commercial action like making a cake or decorating a wedding cake out of religious principles and religious beliefs. I think the core component here is that the state did not give sufficient consideration to that argument. And in fact, it kind of poo-pooed the idea that you could do that. I think it was someone in the Colorado process who compared it to objections to slavery or defenses of slavery and things like that. Then the justices did not look kindly upon that. They basically want, if you're going to go through a process like this and someone says, I'm doing this as part of my religious practice, part of my religious beliefs, doing as you say would cause me to violate my conscience. Depending on your point of view, you would say either that the state has to give due consideration to that, or the more cynical minded would be the state has to at least look like it's giving due consideration to that perspective. A reverse in the other direction would have been a much worse decision for forces of who want to ensure that religious liberty is preserved, even when it rubs some people the wrong way or comes across as being controversial. You know, this is a pretty good one. That's one of the reasons it went 7-2, I suspect, is that it was not on the broader principle. I don't know about you, Greg. I look at this, I'm a little bit annoyed with the Supreme Court. I understand that they don't want to, at least some of the justices don't want to legislate from the bench. They don't believe that they're supposed to make these broad sweeping decisions that overhaul these sorts of things. They want to let legislators legislate. If you, you know, want to have the laws more clear on this, then write them more clearly, write them more specifically. Having said that, I mean, you know, at the very least, everyone who believes that their religious liberty, their religious beliefs have been infringed upon by the state can at least point to this decision and say, hey, in this case of a Colorado baker, the state was in the wrong and the Supreme Court spoke against that. That would provide precedent for this set of circumstances. So my guess is this legal fight isn't really done for a good long while yet, Greg. But I do think this is a better decision than if it had gone the other way. And the fact that it was 7-2 does indicate that there's a bit of a legal consensus, at least in the way the Colorado handled this particular case.
Exactly. It's been almost 3 years now since the Obergefell decision. And one of the big arguments being made in favor of that decision was, what do you care? This isn't going to affect you. Let these people do what they want. And then immediately we got cases like the bakers and the florists and the photographers and what happens in the schools now and all sorts of other things. So a little bit of a win here for the religious liberty side of this debate. And Jim, let's move on to our bad martini now. And Bill Clinton back in the headlines. He's co-authored, sort of, a political thriller. He did it with James Patterson, so I'm guessing Bill Clinton came up with maybe some of the ideas. I'm guessing Patterson probably did most of the writing. That's usually how that works.
It was a third guy, Greg. You know, James Patterson has a new book roughly every week, and I'm only slightly exaggerating with that, in every genre. Yeah. James Patterson is a human assembly line, and you know, I'm sure he's got research assistants, wink, wink, who do help, who help with the writing, wink, wink. But yes, it's pretty clear that, yes, this was a Patterson, Patterson, Clinton, and a really, really overworked ghostwriter in there somewhere.
Yes. I guess the Patterson name gets everybody a bigger paycheck in the end. But
Patterson wants to co-write with me. That's fine. I'm not trashing this. I'm saying this is perfectly good for everybody involved.
So anyway, Craig Melvin of NBC interviews these two guys. They talk somewhat about the book, but we're also in the throes of the Me Too movement, and there's been a lot of flashback to the Clinton Lewinsky scandal and other Clinton scandals, Juanita Broderick, Paula Jones, Kathleen Willey along the way. Craig Melvin, to his credit, actually went there, referring to some quotes Monica Lewinsky had that in hindsight she believes she was the victim of sexual harassment, given the power that Clinton had at the time, that she was a lowly intern at the time over 20 years ago when all of this happened. So Melvin asks a pretty straightforward question, and Bill Clinton lets him have it here. Let's listen. This goes about a minute.
Do you think differently or feel more responsibility?
No, I felt terrible then, and I came to grips with it.
Did you ever apologize to him?
Yes, and nobody believes that I got out of that for free. I left the White House $16 million in debt. But you typically have ignored gaping facts in describing this, and I bet you don't even know them. This was litigated 20 years ago. Two-thirds of the American people sided with me. They were not insensitive to that. I had a sexual harassment policy when I was governor in the 80s. I had two women chiefs of staff when I was governor. Women were overrepresented in the attorney general's office in the 70s for their percentage in the bar. I've had nothing but women leaders in my office since I left. You are giving one side and omitting facts.
Mr. President, I'm not trying to present a side.
You asked me if I agreed. The answer is no, I don't.
And I asked if you'd ever apologize, and you said you had.
I have.
You've apologized to
me. I apologize to everybody in the world.
Oh, Jim. So first of all, we can try to figure out maybe what gaping facts are. Secondly, I love trying to parse Clinton's statements. I was a little rusty at this. And then you just hear these general facts of I had a sexual harassment policy as governor. I'm sure he did. That he had, more women than normal in his attorney general's office. I'm sure he did.
Greg, I'll tell you, my sexual harassment policies, when I saw harass, I would try to have sex with him. That was my sexual harassment policy. I'm going to say that was utterly tasteless. And it was. Forgive me, everyone. At least it's Friday. Oh, wait, it's not. It was kind of fascinating that all of a sudden, this morning, June 4th, 2018, we all flash back to 1998. And Bill Clinton is demonstrating he's the same guy. He's learned nothing. He's adjusted nothing. He's revised his thing. He's utterly convinced that he was the victim in this story. And he's utterly convinced that he was the hero, because elsewhere in that interview, he said, I defended the Constitution. What in the Constitution did you defend, Mr. Clinton? What show me how you were the good guy in all of this. I was $16 million getting in debt when I came out of the Oval Office. Well, gee, maybe it's because you got yourself in trouble and had to hire all those high-priced lawyers. And oh, by the way, it's not like there was any doubt you're going to make millions upon millions of dollars in speaking gigs and your memoirs and everything else. So don't come crying poverty to the rest of us about how awful and hard this is. Where Hillary Clinton said dead broke, as if there wasn't a guarantee that she was going to sign a multimillion-dollar deal for her memoirs, and she was heading into the Senate. Yeah, Bill Clinton, eternal victim. It was really kind of striking. The other thing was, so you know, I'll skip over the you know, customary observation that, you know, Bill Clinton, for, you know, who I think was Dick Morris, who said, instead of being seen as the nation's father figure, Bill Clinton was seen as the nation's little brother figure, that there was always something a little bit immature about him. It's really striking to see Bill Clinton as an old man. He, you know, the wavering in the voice, really kind of striking. But his entire mentality has not changed one iota from 1998. That all of a sudden he did nothing wrong. I was also fascinated in that conversation. He brought up, they turned the question to Patterson, who's sitting there very awkwardly yes. during this entire conversation. And at one point, you know, Patterson's like, it's 20 years ago. Like, probably in the mind's like, please, let's get off this and get back to talking about the book. I need more sales. I've only sold a bazillion this year because I released a million. And Patterson says, look, let's talk about JFK. Let's talk about Lyndon Johnson. I guess the idea is saying that there's other examples of bad behavior in the Oval Office. So let's do that, Greg. I mean, do you think if the country had learned in 1962 that JFK was banging 19-year-old interns, that the country would have said, hey, no big deal?
No, I think they would have been upset back then.
There's having an affair with Marilyn Monroe. And then there's an affair with the 19-year-old White House intern on her fourth day in the job. In the bed, he sleeps with Jackie. Right. I think if that had gone out there, I don't think the public would have been cool with that. I think if this had been known at the time, I don't know if John F. Kennedy would be remembered as such a great president. We can debate that for another time. But this idea of Bill Clinton, he loved bringing out that argument up against Donna Shalala when she, you know, for all the other flaws she had as a member of Clinton's cabinet, she too, it's kind of this variation of like, well, you really did put us in a tough spot, Mr. President. Don't you feel some regret about this? And he says he shot back at her something like, you know, would they say the same thing about President Kennedy? Bill Clinton really does believe that if he invokes President Kennedy as this all-purpose shield, right? Well, if Kennedy did it, you're giving me grief that you never gave him, never mind the fact that the public really didn't know about this, and this is also unfair to him or something. So kind of fascinating. I don't know if this will affect the book sales or anything, or the, oh, is Hillary going to come back in 2020 argument or anything like that. I think the Clintons are about ready to ride off into the sunset, but just kind of fascinating. Also, a little bit kudos to Craig Melvin for having the courage to bring this up, because you could see, man, oh man, it wasn't quite one of his purple rages there, Greg. It was, you know, by age it had, you know, faded to lavender, but man, oh man, Clinton was furious that he was being asked about this. And I think it's a perfectly legitimate issue to raise, not just because, you know, he can say that 20 years have passed, but yes, the times have passed. And the idea that, you know, he wants to set himself up as being this defender of Me Too. I mean, at one point in the discussion, Greg, he says he laments that the current occupant of the Oval Office has been accused of so much and his voters don't seem to care. Yeah, Bill Clinton. I wonder how that happens, right? If you want to see why do so many Republicans shrug off all of the, you know, fairly credible allegations of sexual misconduct against Donald Trump, it's like the 1980s anti-drug ad, Greg. We learned it from watching you.
Exactly. Any discussion of Bill Clinton immediately requires a shower afterwards. It's just so sleazy. But
Greg, every time you and I discuss Bill Clinton, you should just have parental discretion is advised.
Yeah, no kidding. But if you need to take that shower, Dollar Shave Club is the way to go. Because if you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, we've got good news for you. Dollar Shave Club has a lot of stuff to help you out. Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. I told you guys last week that I got a huge box of stuff from Dollar Shave Club. My wife told me over a text message, I got this huge box from Dollar Shave Club, and it smells like man. Still using a lot of these products here. The shave lather is, I mentioned it last week, it works so nicely. It really does kind of brace you and wake you up in the morning, and it gives you a nice clean shave. I have to admit that since then, one morning I used one of the more traditional shaving creams and left me with some razor burn. So I went digging through the box. Oh yeah, there's repair serum in there. So I put some of that on, and by the end of the day, not so much razor burn. Very, very good. So Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready in the bathroom.
Dollar Shave Club really does have everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, from shampoo to conditioner to body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that will leave your tush feeling tingly clean. I'm a big fan of their Amber and Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. Never smelled anything like it. Good luck finding a product that great at the store. Remember, all of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with top shelf ingredients that will not break your budget, and you will feel the difference. Plus, Shipping is included with your membership.
And here is a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you got that in your pocket right now, right? You can get their Daily Essential Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlies, those are the amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the Six Blade Executive. Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need for the bathroom. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And a lot of good things happening for the Trump administration. We talked about one of them on Friday in our Good Martini with the unemployment rate down to 3.8%. We learned since then that the North Korean summit is back on, perhaps with a more humble North Korea. We'll see in due time if that mattered at all. But the president drawing attention to himself yet again, since all of the Sunday shows spent most of their time talking about the Mueller investigation. The president tweeting out, "As has been stated by numerous legal scholars, I have the absolute right to pardon myself. But why would I do that when I have done nothing wrong? In the meantime, the never-ending witch hunt led by 13 very angry and conflicted Democrats and others continues into the midterms." Not to be outdone, the president's legal spokesman, somehow he's getting paid for these performances, Rudy Giuliani, speaking to the Huffington Post. Here's the beginning of that story. Candidate Donald Trump bragged he could shoot someone on New York's Fifth Avenue and not lose any support. And now President Donald Trump's lawyer says Trump could shoot the FBI director, I guess the former FBI director, in the Oval Office and still not be prosecuted for it. Quote, "In no case can he be subpoenaed or indicted," Giuliani told HuffPost Sunday, claiming a president's constitutional powers are that broad. Quote, "I don't know how you can indict while he's in office, no matter what it is." Giuliani said impeachment was the initial remedy for a president's illegal behavior. Even in the extreme hypothetical case of Trump having shot former FBI Director James Comey to end the Russia investigation rather than just firing him. Quote, "If he shot James Comey, he'd be impeached the next day," Giuliani said. "Impeach him, and then you can do whatever you want to do to him." So, Jim, the president continuing to focus on the fact that he has the right to pardon himself. I'm clearly doing himself no favors. And Giuliani's use of totally hypothetical metaphors of killing James Comey, probably not helping too much either.
Look, I want you to think well of my client. So I just want you to picture him murdering the FBI director. Just put that image in your head and that'll make you feel better about what a good guy I'm representing. I tend to agree with the mentality of John Yoo, who was a high-level official to the Bush Department of Justice. He's joined us on some National Review cruises. Very smart guy, and his mentality is, look, if the founders had not wanted the president to be able to pardon himself, they would have put that in there. That would have been, they didn't just forget about it or something like that. Although, as my colleague Jonah Goldberg likes to point out, that when they wrote the Constitution and put in the pardon power, there were like three federal crimes. Much fewer chances you're going to be able to use it. But because the Constitution doesn't say the president can't do this, then yes, the president does have the power constitutionally and legally. Having said that, John Yoo is very clear. This is a terrible idea. And not just for this president, but for virtually any president, because inherent in the idea of pardoning yourself is an admission that a crime was committed. Even though you might be able to legally say, I've pardoned myself, therefore you can't prosecute me for breaking the law. Look, impeachment is similarly vaguely worded. No one has ever really laid out in perfect detail what high crimes and misdemeanors are. And it would seem that if you are pardoning yourself for a crime that, serious enough to have you worried about being prosecuted after you leave office, well, then you probably have committed something that's fairly serious and the Congress may want to remove you from office. This is what we have a vice president for. It's kind of interesting. We were discussing this. We're discussing Bill Clinton earlier because, there was this argument that, look, the president's suborned perjury. He committed perjury himself, regardless of what you think of the underlying matter of the Alinsky affair and all of that. You can't lie under oath and you can't tell other people to lie under oath without consequence. This was the argument behind the Republican attempt to impeach Bill Clinton. It did not succeed in the Senate. We don't know what Mueller is going to come back with. We don't know if he's going to, make the argument that President Trump had committed crimes. I think a lot of this is putting the cart before the horse. We will see based on that evidence if the House wants to impeach. I think it's very likely if the Democrats take the House that they will want to impeach. And then we'll see we'll go to the Senate and it'll be interesting to see how Republicans in the Senate vote. If they believe that the evidence is really credible and that President Trump has committed some sort of crime that makes it impossible to leave him in the office of the presidency, well, then, you know, maybe they'll impeach. Or they may look at this and say, you know what, I agree with the president. This is a partisan witch hunt. Nothing he did is all that serious. None of the evidence presented by Mueller is all that compelling. And it'll shake out that way. I don't think Trump helps himself when he says, well, look, I can always just pardon myself. You know, and it's interesting. Even in that statement, he kind of acknowledges he wouldn't do it because he believes adamantly that he's done nothing wrong. And what's more, to pardon himself would be a de facto admission. And whatever he'd be admitting there, I think there might be enough people in Congress who would say, you know what, this has been an interesting experiment of a presidency, but we cannot turn a blind eye to lawbreaking, and things would shake out there. I also would just point out the president's timing on this tweet. We had, you know, the Bill Clinton interview had been aired for like 10, 15 minutes, and everybody was like, oh my goodness, what a day this is going to be. This is just going to be a brutal day for Democrats and Bill Clinton, as Bill Clinton reminds everybody of how much they can't stand him and how terrible he was. And then the president had to jump in and say, hey, you know what? I might pardon myself. You know, I can do that, you know. And, of course, he has to, you know, distract him. So, can't let the Democrats have one solid bad news cycle. Now, can he?
Jim, I have a question for you, and I hope this doesn't sound too much like a conspiracy theory. Is Rudy Giuliani, you think, just a little bit past his prime? Or do you think Trump somehow slighted him in a way back in the 80s or 90s and Rudy Giuliani decided to get paid a lot of money by Donald Trump to help, quote unquote, his legal effort here in 2018?
Do you remember that there was some sort of fancy event where Rudy, they did a comedy video in which Rudy Giuliani dressed up in drag?
Yes.
And Donald Trump comes along and hits on him. It's one of the weirder and more disturbing comedy videos you're ever going to see. I can only assume that a large amount of alcohol had been consumed to justify all of this. Maybe Rudy was offended by Donald Trump's behavior. I don't know. Good question, and we'll see how this shakes out. The other thing is also worth keeping in mind, though, is that, remember, Trump's definition of doing a good job for him is not necessarily the same as everybody else's. Trump loves combativeness. Trump loves it when you I'm sure Trump probably looks at Bill Clinton's interview and said, boy, Bill Clinton really gave it to that guy. That looked good for Bill Clinton. Trump loves to, you know, attack the interviewer, turn the tables, go after them. So my suspicion is that when Rudy does this stuff, whether or not it actually helps Trump's position legally or in the general overall PR fight, Trump loves to see somebody on TV defending him and you know, attack. And so my suspense is maybe Trump is quite happy with the job Rudy Giuliani is doing, even if it looks a little bit differently to the rest of us out here.
Interesting take. Very interesting take. All right, Jim, it's not Friday yet, but Monday's in the books. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And do not forget to visit our friends over at Dollar Shave Club. For just $5, you can get that daily essential starter set and see for yourself how great their products really are. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.